with me is the great Dr. Robert. How are you?
Great. Wow, I feel really special.
The
I've done something very cool, but I really haven't.
great
So
and fantastic Dr. Robert. I'm
great showman. But yes, how you doing, Sam?
doing great. And it's just us today. I've really enjoyed the last few that we did. I really liked talking about nutrition. I feel like I had a renewed sense of information, and it's always nice because then when people bring things up, I'm like, oh yeah, well, I just talked to this person on the podcast, and you know what I mean? So I enjoy it. I feel like I learned so much doing the podcast that hopefully everybody enjoyed the nutrition series. And we are going to try to have a fresh another fresh food option. They just couldn't kind of get to us in time, which is fine, but so hopefully we will have one follow-up episode down the line.
Yeah, that should be hopefully very soon. I spoke with them recently, and hopefully they'll be joining us here soon. So I can't wait to get on that one. But yeah, I learned a lot from that series of podcasts. It was like I'm actually gonna probably change my dog diet at some point. I won't say who I'm changing to avoid biases, but there's some interesting ones that I was like, oh man, I'll give it a try and see what happens. So very excited to
I
experiment a
think
bit.
probably my favorite thing about it, and I hope this is what people took away from it, like there isn't one right way. There isn't one right answer. You have to look at your budget. You have to look at like where you have room to store food. You have to look at your ideals. You have to look at your dog's health profile and like definitely involve your veterinarian. If you have a good trusted veterinarian, and if you don't, you should find one that you do trust. But the point of the matter is that there isn't one right answer. I mean, we had more than one scientist, more than one nutritionist, and they all sort of had the same like thought process, but different philosophies, which I thought was really cool. That it just kind of maybe takes some of the stress out of it to be like, okay, if I feed this, I'm not wrong. If I feed this, I'm not wrong. As long as I'm knowing that it's balanced, complete, and safe, at the end of the day, there's lots of good and right ways to do things.
Yeah, I think that's really the take-home point. Just like there's more than one ways to do things, and at the end of the day, you all have the best interest of your pet at heart. That's kind of what matters.
Yeah,
It's not like
yeah.
you're trying to poison your pets; it's you're trying to
So,
find a better.
yeah, I thought I just liked that a lot because I think I was even starting to get to the point where every time I looked something up, I was like, oh, is this right? Is this wrong? I don't know, and then I'm like, am I advising people properly? And so I always get way too nervous that like I don't want to miss anything and I want to give people the right information. So it definitely gave me a little bit more confidence too. It made me feel a little bit better.
No, I loved it. I'm excited for what pick up more series to do in the future. So if anybody has any ideas of something they'd like to see, give us a ring because that actually leads us into our next question.
Yes, our topic for today is actually based on a question we got, which is so cool. We don't
Yes.
get that too often, but I'm excited that we do. So, do you want to share maybe the question and the email, and then we can go from
Yes. And I'll read it because I don't have it memorized. But
there?
our listeners asked, they have a cat with dry skin. Is there anything they can use for helping with that? Maybe something that they have around the house potentially. They're indoor cats only. So yes, that is the question. Anything potentially at home remedies you can use for your pets, or just in general, we'll probably broach on both topics, I'm sure. So yeah. Sam, why don't you start us off because skincare is way more up your
Yeah,
alley.
skincare is what I do all day, every day. This is
I
not
have
one of the
a little
emergencies
panic
that
when I saw
Robert
this.
would see. Okay, so not to be too generic about it, but like there's two things that I think are really important, and something that I don't think that we've mentioned kind of previously when we talk about people sending us questions and stuff like that, which is so fun, and I love that people do that. But it's so helpful to know a little bit more about your cats. So if you can, in the future when people have questions, the more you can tell me about their age, maybe their weight even. I know it seems like, well, why would that matter? But it actually does in the discussion of dry skin. Because let's say that you're talking about a cat that is 1 year old versus a cat that's 20 years old. I am going to have different opinions, most likely, about why that cat may have dry skin or may not have dry skin. The other question, too, is, well, is the dry skin new? Has it always had dry skin? Is it that it was always a little dry, but now it's a little bit worse? And if it is right around 2 or 3, I may have a different reason that I think that that's happening versus, again, a 20-year-old cat. The other thing is the cat overweight? is the cat grooming? Because I know it's like, well, why would being overweight even matter with dry skin? But some cats get so fat, and I'm not saying this of the listener who wrote the thing. I have
No, this
no
is a
idea. Her cat may have the
general part.
most perfect, exactly, most perfect body condition. But if a cat gets really, really overweight, they cannot really groom very well. And again, some cats groom beautifully, and some cats just don't. They really need to be brushed all the time. And so you're going to see the character of the turnover of the skin be quite different in a cat that is grooming an appropriate amount all over their body versus a cat who, for whatever reason, can't reach their back, you know, or are they arthritic? So now they're not grooming the way that they used to, and they not, might need something to be a little bit more comfortable. So yeah, there are generic answers certainly for those questions, but signalment, so like, you know, breed, age, you know, the more information that I know about your cat as an individual, the better I can sort of say, that sounds like something that could be infectious. Maybe you need to go see your vet. And then like another generic thing is like, do they have fleas? Are they on any sort of preventative? And again, does that make their skin scaly if they're not? Well, if they have dermatitis, absolutely. They can have a problem. The other thing, which some people don't really realize that is something that you can see, is if somebody in the house, a human, has had ringworm recently, and now your cat's skin looks different. Your cat, who's never left your house, could still have ringworm. And if you just got one of those two cats, let's say they're indoor only, but you just rescued one of them, and now the other one is really flaky, and the one you just got is fine, that one could be a carrier, and now you've just brought ringworm into your house. The likelihood that it's that is actually fairly low, but it's possible. And so that's why it is really hard, I think, a lot of times when people call and you know, call into the vet, let's say. Especially for you, right? Being an emergency vet who may not have a long-standing relationship with them. You know, for me, a lot of times I'm like, well, I know that owner. I know that that dog, I've seen that dog. Oh, they never had that problem before. Or I've known that cat for 10 years. I've never seen that cat have a dry, flaky skin. So this is weird and this is new. Versus, oh yeah, she's always had an issue with that. It's the spring, okay, or it's the winter. We are, you know, our heat's on and it's very dry, so we need to turn on the humidifier or something like that. Which is one of those generic things that you can do at home, is make sure that the house isn't dry. It actually can affect their skin, absolutely. And some cats are very sensitive. And so, actually, even some cats will come into the shower, like into the bathroom when you're showering, sometimes too. They actually like the moist air. So, you might see something like that. But sometimes, you know, looking for an answer without knowing maybe some of the other underlining stuff, we could skip over a really big issue. Because you might look at it and think it looks flaky, but I might look at it and go, ooh, this actually looks like a dermatitis. This looks like an infection. And so then we have to make sure that we're not missing anything. So I would say if your cat's always kind of had a little extra dander and you just feel like maybe it's a little bit worse as the seasons change, one sort of generic thing you can do is start them on omega-3 fatty acids. That can certainly help change the character, and give them a little more moisture. And they do make ones specifically for cats and dogs that you don't, it takes the guesswork out of it for you, because I do know people that are like, well, can I just take my fish oil that I take and just pop it open on their food? And it wouldn't be toxic to do so if it's what you take. The problem is that there's pretty well established amounts of EPA that they need in order for them to have a clinical response. And you'd have to actually do the math to figure out if a human one is going to meet that. The DHA, like we take that more for like brain function and stuff like that. And DHA, of course, is good for them too, but the EPA is what is the anti-inflammatory for their skin. And so there are companies that make like pumps that go right on the food that, based on their weight, you know exactly how much to put on. There are, you know, different types. Like sometimes people are like, oh, well, I just want to put salmon oil on there. Well, that may throw off the balance of their food. So sometimes going for something that is, you know, or coconut oil or something like that, you know, which really wouldn't be the best first choice. You really could just like go on Chewy or something like that and take a look, or you know, go to your vet if they carry stuff like that. Amazon has a lot of those things too. I mean, a lot of veterinary products that are over the counter, non-prescription, very safe. And that, but I would say too, if you're like looking, you know, look at reviews, and then before you kind of pull that trigger, if you have a veterinarian, just say, hey, I'm thinking of getting this product for my cat's skin. I've noticed it's pretty dry. Can, you know, is this okay? Because they would be able to answer that in light of your cat's health profile. And I would say where I see, you know, like a lot of those obese cats, especially those medium to long hair cats, they need to be brushed daily, or else they get very flaky skin. And we're not used to seeing that in cats, because most of the time they do such a good job grooming with that like brush-like tongue that they have, you know, where they're taking care of so much of that cell turnover. So you think about like humans, you know, we'll exfoliate sometimes if your skin's, you know, you need a little help with that turnover. Everyone has that, and so do they. And so it really depends on what the difference is, like where you're seeing those differences. And then there are specific shampoos, again, best with the guidance of your vet, because they'll rule out whether or not there is an underlying infection, right? So first things first, making sure there's not a medical cause for the flakiness. It's just sort of a routine kind of flakiness. And making sure we don't have any ectoparasites. So fleas, ticks, you know, mites, things like that. Because there are certain types of dirt, like of like mites that also look like flakiness, but they're not. So they need actually to be treated. And so, but then something like an omega-3 fatty acid is pretty safe. But anything you're giving your cat or your dog, you really should mention to your vet, especially if they're going to be getting any sort of a like a anesthetic procedure or a surgery, because even supplements will sometimes change the way we heal, the way we bleed, you know, occasionally depending on the supplement. Or even like certain things like CBD may change how we process certain drugs, so some things may stay on board longer. And it's pretty important that you mention those things. Like even when we were talking to the doctor from Jope, you know, I didn't know that if you took UC2, I mean, at the same time as glucosamine chondroitin, you'd be basically like wasting your money, because they interact with each other. You know, I didn't know that. And those are two supplements. Why, it wouldn't even occur to me that you would have to split them up. And so I think it's like really making sure that we realize that anything that we're putting into our cat's or dog's body is like a medical choice. You know what I mean? And sometimes people don't like really think of that. So like they'll say, oh, are you giving any medications? And you really should be mentioning supplements too.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. Like, there's a lot of at-home stuff we can do, and there's a lot of like supplements, but we don't always realize the full impact. Like you said, you and I are both trained medical professionals, and neither of us knew that, you know, the UC2 thing and glucose, and I mean, we know a lot, but we can't know all the things. So it's just something that we keep learning. So always check with your veterinarian to see if they know anything about it first, and do your due diligence. But I think those are a great place to start. I think the humidity, even the showers. But I think really it comes down to the history stuff. So much ability, and we get now. I get this from even friends. I'm sure you do too, from, you know, Facebook you haven't seen in years, and they're like, "Hey, I've got a question about my cat or my dog. Can I ask you?" And you're like, "Yeah, sure." 9 times out of 10, it's, well, you should probably follow up your vet, because one, they know your history really well, and we'll ask you. Like, I'll just call you because I'm like, "Hey, there's so much information I need to know about your pet. I can give you even close to an answer, because it's not just like a, oh, you have this, it must be that. It's a, you have these symptoms, it's one of 12 things. We're going to kind of narrow it down." But it's a great question to ask, because there are some at-home stuff I think that even I just learned about here. So that, I panicked when I saw this question. I was like, I don't know skin stuff. I was like, Sam, help.
Well, and actually too, it's funny that this one came up, because I have a patient right now that I suspect has, so it's a golden retriever, right? So it's different than this cat, right, that we're sort of dedicating this to. But this dog came in with this, like, for a second opinion. And this poor dog is a golden retriever that is just, when I flaky skin doesn't even begin to describe it. The skin looks, it's like nothing you've ever seen until you see it. And then you're like, oh, I know what this is. But then you're like, oh man, there's this condition that golden retrievers get. It's called ichthyosis. And I've only ever seen one other clinical case of it, but it was much more mild. And so I've only ever really seen it one time, like where we biopsied it, we knew for sure that this dog had ichthyosis, right? Because that's the thing. And so we started to talk a little bit, and this dog's been through the ringer as far as like being treated for skin infections, being treated for being itchy, being treated for having allergies. They went through all this. They've spent so much money, thousands of dollars, checking thyroid, checking, all these things at different clinics. And it had never, like, the idea that this could be something else, like, it just hadn't come up. It's always easiest, when you're the second opinion, right? Like, so I'm just saying, what you're this the second opinion is always the smartest, because you have everybody else's information. So certainly not to downplay what other people did, because it may not even have looked like what I saw when they first saw it, right? It may have been this very mild sort of thing. And then dogs that have this condition are very prone to secondary infections. And PS, golden retrievers get allergies all the time. So it's not crazy that it's this and that. You know what I mean? And so that's why I do think sometimes people get a little bit frustrated when they ask us for like a quick, easy explanation that like there really isn't one, because, and it sounds like a cop out, like, oh, ask your vet, but it's not. It's because we don't want to miss anything, and we know that really it could be door A, door B, or door C, and it might be door A and door B. And so we may be having to deal with the infection and the allergy in order to be able to get to the point where we can get the other thing under control. And so that's been something that I've been researching, because as of right now, we don't have the ability to do the testing that we need to do. Just financially, we just need to take a break, because we've been doing they had been through already a lot of tests, and there's very little downside to doing sort of a kind of empirical sort of a treatment. So I sort of have been going down this sort of rabbit hole of, well, what other things are out there that you can do? And so there are some like spot on treatments that you can do that are like an essential fatty acid, but more of like a conditioning treatment that you leave on the animal. So I would say, if you're feeling like just the oral omega-3 fatty acids, which certainly these cats that we're kind of answering this question for, is also something I'm going to recommend to the owner of this golden retriever, right? Like he needs to probably be on a diet that's really fraught with these sort of amino acids, I mean essential fatty acids, and then also maybe even get a little bit more to top it off on top of that. Plus, making sure that we're using, there are special shampoos out there that actually help to take the scaling away. So sometimes it is actually you need to physically sort of get that scaliness off. And sometimes the other thing that's a little bit frustrating is the first shampoo you pick might not be the right one. I've had dogs where they've made maybe like, a 60 to 80% improvement. So yeah, we could all sit here and look at it and go, yeah, this looks much better. But we're not quite there yet. They still have that sort of, when I go like this, I still feel there's a film there. And then when I look at the skin, there's just that, those just big flakes and stuff. Okay, so we need to do one of those things where we're going to be able to do that. And so sometimes it's a benzoyl peroxide shampoo. Sometimes it's one that has more ceramides in it. Sometimes it's one for seborrhea. It just really depends on what those flakes look like. And in this case, I said to the owner, I was like, I don't think it's going to be just one answer. I think it's going to be an all of the above approach. I think, we've ruled out that there's any thyroid dysfunction here, which in a golden you definitely have to do before you go down that path. But then it's like, okay, so now we know we're here. Now let me find you those products to try, and then we're gonna kind of do an elimination, and we're gonna figure out, well, like, what's the best way to keep this under control in a way that you can afford too, right? Because that's the other thing. And so sometimes when you're in that state of like, well, is it this shampoo that's going to work? Is it that shampoo? Is it this ear flush? Depending on what's going on, sometimes like buy the trial sizes and just try it for a little while and be okay with the answer being like, nope, this one's not the right one. Let's move on to the next one. Because there's a million products out there.
Oh yeah, there's, like, as we've talked about, there's so many choices and we get kind of confused by all of them. But the history and the physical exam, like the big parts of like why we do what we do, and you get a lot more information. And I think that can be mentioned before. Like there was a study that came out a while ago that said like 80% of veterinarians could diagnose the pet based on history alone. Just because of how important that is. And I even had a colleague the other day, they had a patient or a cat come in, it was a 1-year-old cat. That was like wheezing and at home, and the cat's otherwise like healthy, just like eating, drinking, all doing the fun stuff. But they're like, oh, that's weird, it's wheezing. We took X-rays, and X-rays actually looked really good, like they looked fine. But when we found out that the owner was like a candle burning fiend, and they stopped it and they got back, just like, yeah, I fixed it. Like they're done wheezing now. It's like it's the simple. It's like just that's something that you would even think about most of the time, but environmental factors that play a role into it. So it's. It's playing detective. You know, I have you been to the doc? You've been to the human doctor, obviously.
A couple of times.
Sometimes I'm amazed at like how little of a physical exam they'll do. To know like how important it is to us.
I know.
And I guess there's differences, right? Like I can tell them where it hurts, where there's some differences. But sometimes I'm like, we're gonna do more of a physical exam at some point. Like
I know.
Not that I want you to touch me in a weird way, but I'm just like, are you going to touch me at some point to like...
Yeah, it is weird. It's totally bizarre to a veterinarian how little they do. And actually, what's funny is my sister, when she was in medical school, would practice her physical exam skills on me. So they actually do have a physical exam that they are taught that is just like ours, like just the way we do it, you know? But I think because history is so important and we can go, yeah, my arm hurts, my, you know, I think that that's, they just don't do that much. You know what I mean? Like you come in because you have lower right quadrant pain. They're going to get to an appendicitis real quick because they're going to go, oh, you're painful. Let's get a CT scan. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really need to look in your ears because you didn't tell me your ears were bothering you, you know, but I can't tell you how many times I have had someone come in for one thing, and because I did a full physical exam, I found two other things. And it's sometimes related, sometimes it's, yeah, we do have this, but he also has an ear infection, so we, you know, eventually that's going to become worse. We don't want to just treat this and miss that, you know. So it is hard because they can't tell us, yeah, my ear hurts and I've also been vomiting for 3 days. So yeah,
you know, we should have your sister on at some point and do like a differences of the medicines type.
Yeah, we should. We should. Yeah, she's great. You know, you love lots of fun with her. She's really awesome.
And if you guys do go, you know, do get out, it'd be fun. So.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, so it is a really interesting sort of thing to see the differences between like human medicine and veterinary medicine. But they have a lot of mysteries to figure out too, and so it is so important. But I would say to our wonderful listener who sent us the email, thank you so much for listening. And you can certainly send us more information if you'd like, a little bit more specific, what should you do next kind of a thing. But definitely humidifier, making sure that the house is not too dry is definitely like step one. Making sure they're on flea and tick preventative, step two. Something like, you know, Revolution is going to cover for mites. It's going to cover for fleas. It's very safe. And yes, even if they never walk outside, they can have fleas. And and then last but not least, put them on omega-3 fatty acids. Get, you know, call your vet or look on Amazon, look at all the reviews of a good one for cats. Sometimes you have to start below the amount if they get a little bit of diarrhea from it at first until their body gets used to it. That's okay. You can work up to the right dose. You're not going to hurt them by underdosing them with omega-3 fatty acids. And then some of the spot-on treatments and medicated shampoos are really, really helpful for just cutting through some of that scaling. But that I would definitely get a recommendation from your vet. And then brush your cat. Make sure that they're getting groomed and brushed on a regular basis. Or if they are not grooming themselves properly, another reason to go to the vet to find out why. If they're older, arthritis can be a reason. If they're younger or they have really long hair. Some cats are just lazy. Sometimes they're fat. So those are my answers for what to do there.
They're good answers. I agree to that. It's either that systemic disease or you know, overweight or arthritis. That's like the big three. So definitely worth talking about at some point.
Yeah. But yeah, if anyone else has any other questions, they can always email us at podcast@mybalto.com and we'll be happy to answer them. And look, we can dedicate entire episodes just to that. And this one is pretty quick and easy. So I really appreciate everybody for listening. I really had fun reconnecting with just you, Robert. This is always fun whenever it's just the two of us.
Well, I can't remember the last time we have, so it's like it's been a long bit. So, but great catching up. We'll see you guys next week for another fun and exciting podcast that we've come on.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.